The money came from our work with the oil industry, and our expertise in running projects came from our work with the oil industry.
Alaska's first commercial-scale solar project is being built by oil industry veterans. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, September 20th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a vote approaches in Bethel on ending alcohol sales in the city.
Some people were drinking way too much every day.
The ambulance crew was just going.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
And by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott announced today that they oppose the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has more.
Walker and Mallott cited Kavanaugh's record, or presumed positions, on health care, labor law, and laws important to Alaska Natives. And they pointed out violence against women in Alaska is an epidemic. They referred to the sexual assault allegation against Kavanaugh and said they couldn't condone his confirmation while so many questions remain unanswered. Governors, of course, have no direct say in confirming Supreme Court justices, but the announcement adds heft to the Kavanaugh opposition in Alaska, and Kavanaugh's detractors hope it will influence Senator Lisa Murkowski, a key Republican swing vote. Murkowski and Senator Dan Sullivan spoke to Kavanaugh after the Alaska Federation of Natives raised concerns about him. Both senators say they're convinced Kavanaugh does not intend to undermine the legal status of Alaska Natives or the laws and programs that help them. Walker, an independent, and Mallott, a Democrat, are running for re-election, but this announcement came from their state offices, not their campaign. Democratic challenger Mark Begich previously announced his opposition to Kavanaugh. Republican candidate Mike Dunleavy announced his support for Kavanaugh in July. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The Association of Village Council Presidents has also joined AFN and other tribal groups across the nation in opposing Kavanaugh's confirmation. The association's executive board sent a letter to Senator Murkowski today stating their solidarity with AFN. Officials say Alaska is receiving more than $10 million to help fight its opioid problem. The $10.4 million announced Wednesday is among more than $1 billion distributed to states by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. For Alaska, about $4 million will go toward medication-based treatments. Nearly $6.4 million will go toward community health centers, rural organizations, and academic institutions for increased access to services. In Alaska, overdose deaths involving the synthetic opioid fentanyl and related synthetic opioids more than quadrupled last year, from 8 deaths in 2016 to 37 in 2017. Authorities say that given the state's small population, estimated at just under 740,000 last year, Alaska also has had one of the nation's highest per capita death rates for prescription opioid overdoses since 2012. Alaska's first commercial-scale solar farm is about to come online. Its builders say they want to move the world toward cleaner energy sources. But as Nat Herz with Alaska's Energy Desk reports, they're not ready to renounce oil and gas just yet.
Jen Miller is working on her 400-panel commercial solar project north of Anchorage. It's September, but there are still black flies buzzing. Her dog Ralphie is wandering around with a chunk of moose bone. Miller's here with her husband. They both have drills and tool belts, and they're moving a ladder around, putting in some of the last few pieces before they can flip the switch. Miller says she's excited about the outlook for solar power and its potential to slow global warming.
The cool thing is I don't think renewables have to be a charity case. I think they can be a business case, and the more you get to that point, I think the faster we are able to address the climate issue.
The solar farm could power about 30 homes. The local electric utility, Matanuska Electric Association, will buy the power at wholesale rates. The utility's primary source of electricity right now is a power plant that runs on natural gas, a fossil fuel. In a lot of ways, Miller fits the stereotype of someone trying to fight global warming. She has solar panels on her house in Anchorage. She bikes to work. She's been on a river rafting trip in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. But here's something you might not expect. Miller works at BP. You know, the oil company. She explains this as she's walking around the solar site.
When I went to go work for an oil company out of college, the way you hear about oil companies is like everyone that works there is like evil. You know, like Smithers from The Simpsons. And they're actually pretty nice people and they're pretty smart.
The solar project is personal. It's not endorsed or paid for by BP. But Miller is a project manager at the company, and her three partners are all current or former BP employees. One of them is Sam Dennis. Dennis drives a Tesla, one of those fancy electric cars. He thinks the future is in electricity, but he also thinks that the future will be built on a foundation that the oil industry helped create. Dennis points out that the solar panels at the site are standing on recycled oil drilling pipe. And that's not all.
The money came from our work with the oil industry, and our expertise in running projects came from our work with the oil industry. So, and I was thinking back, I'm like, how much of the development of oil 100 years ago was based on knowledge from coal?
Dennis thinks oil companies and their workers can help with the transition toward renewables. Just like the partners in the solar farm, big oil companies have expertise building energy projects, and they have a lot of money. It turns out that Dennis's views aren't that far off from the company he once worked for. Here's Janet Weiss, BP's top executive in Alaska.
What our company is doing is certainly taking some of the cash flow that's been earned through the oil and gas and investing it into our renewables business as well. It's a natural evolution of what we need to do here on the planet.
To be sure, BP still produces a ton of oil, about 4% of global production. Its renewable investments are also small in relation to the company's overall portfolio. But BP last year announced it was investing $200 million in a British solar company. It also has a wind arm, and Weiss says a company wind executive is interested in a trip to Alaska to see if the state has potential for power generation. Officials drafting Alaska's new climate policies say they want the oil industry's help in tackling global warming. Weiss last year was named to the state's climate leadership team, which is chaired by a Democrat, Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott.
My belief is that they are a partner, they will continue to be a partner, but they must be held to account as all of us must be.
Back at the solar farm, Jen Miller is still drilling in parts while Sam Dennis fires up an excavator to fill in a trench. Miller says she wants people to understand that these climate change and energy discussions aren't black and white.
I think a lot of times there's an image that people that work for the oil industry are of certain political views or, you know, putting a box over their head about climate change and they don't think it's happening. But I think humans are much more sophisticated than that. I think humans can hold a much bigger picture in their head.
Miller and her partners are already thinking about a second project. In Willow, I'm Nat Herz.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, climate change could help in the growth of prehistoric trees.
We have lumber potential, you know, certainly firewood potential. It grows very rapidly.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Starting October 1st, all of Alaska will be protected from the harmful effects of secondhand smoke because all public places across the state will be smoke-free. Everyone can now breathe easier as they work and play. Smoke-free workplaces and public spaces protects the health of all Alaskans. It also protects our youth from ever starting smoking. So if you do smoke or vape, please take it outside. For more information about the new smoke-free workplace law, visit smokefree.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Department of Health and Social Services.
Three computer hackers whose botnet, known as Mirai, virtually paralyzed chunks of the internet in 2016, have received light sentences after helping the FBI with cybercrime and cybersecurity. The three men were sentenced Tuesday in U.S. District Court in Alaska. Federal officials say the trio cooperated extensively with Alaska FBI agents on cybercrime and cyberterrorism issues. Officials expect that help to continue as part of the men's sentences of probation and community service. Sentenced were Paris Jha of New Jersey, Josiah White of Pennsylvania, and Dalton Norman of Louisiana. Each received 5 years of probation and 2,500 hours of community service. They also were ordered to pay $127,000 in restitution and gave up significant amounts of cryptocurrency. The city of Sitka is denying all allegations in a whistleblower lawsuit filed against the police department last month. Former Sitka Police Detective Ryan Silva claims he was harassed and demoted for calling out the department's purchase of automatic weapons, among other claims. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Silva's allegations involve a timeline of events, each of which he claims escalated antagonism from his supervisors and led eventually to his demotion and to the decision to relieve him of duty altogether. The city of Sitka, in a reply filed in Sitka Superior Court on September 13th, denies everything but the material facts of the case. Silva argues that problems began in October 2016 when Jeff Ankerfeldt was promoted to chief and adopted an informal policy that good people would not be issued citations. Silva says that when he voiced his concerns over the potential for abuse in this policy, he was rebuffed, setting the stage for further conflict. A year later, Silva again voiced concerns over the department's purchase of 5 automatic weapons and argued that they were unsafe in the hands of officers with no training. He suspected that it was a possible misuse of department money. Shortly after, Silva claims the department began a series of retaliatory activities. The first was to scrutinize his timesheets in relation to his service in the Coast Guard Reserves. Silva argues that he was pressured to decline his duties as a reservist, a violation of federal law. After meeting with the chief on the issue, Silva says he was demoted to patrol officer with no explanation. Matters worsened, Silva claims, in June of this year when he was investigating the possible sexual assault of a 5-year-old child. The investigation suggested the possible involvement of a 13-year-old minor who was a family friend of Sitka's police lieutenant and Silva's direct supervisor. Silva says he was removed from the case by Ankerfeldt to protect the good name of the minor. And finally, in July, Silva's girlfriend, the only female uniformed officer in the department, filed a sexual harassment and discrimination claim against the department with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Silva says his support of his girlfriend and her claim prompted Chief Ankerfeldt to write a letter of reprimand and to subsequently place him on administrative leave. Sitka again has retained Anchorage-based attorneys Michael Gotti and Megan Sandone to represent the city, the police department, and Chief Jeff Ankerfeldt, the 3 co-defendants in the case. They write, "Defendants deny they have retaliated against plaintiff for any reason." The city's denial doesn't go into much detail beyond that, except in response to Silva's assertion that he has received only positive written job evaluations. The city argues that Silva may have been checked in other ways, stating that the plaintiff received constructive criticism, direction, and training from his direct supervisors regarding improvement in performance of his job duties. The city goes on to assert, "Many of these directives may not be reflected in any written job evaluations that may exist." Ryan Silva is being represented by James J. Davis with the Northern Justice Project in Anchorage. A scheduling conference has been set for 1 p.m. November 1st in Sitka Superior Court. Judge Trevor Stevens of Ketchikan will preside. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The group Stand for Alaska, Vote No on One is accusing organizations behind the Salmon Habitat ballot initiative of misleading voters and, quote, flouting Alaska's campaign finance laws. Stand for Alaska formed to oppose the initiative and gets much of its support from mining and oil companies. The initiative would toughen the permitting process for projects built in salmon habitat. In a complaint filed today with the state, Stand for Alaska alleges a series of violations by the organizations Stand for Salmon, the Alaska Center, and the group called Yes for Salmon, Vote Yes on One. Katie Capozzi is Stand for Alaska's campaign manager.
We believe that campaign disclosure laws aren't being followed, and Alaskans aren't able to really get a clear picture of who is financing the, you know, Stand for Salmon / Yes for Salmon effort.
Stand for Alaska claims the groups are improperly reporting how they are coordinating the campaign, underplaying the Alaska Center's role. Stand for Alaska also alleges they aren't properly disclosing campaign contribution sources. Stand for Salmon director Ryan Scriver says the accusations are groundless.
Stand for Salmon has taken many steps to make sure that we are fully compliant with all of the state and federal rules and laws and regulations. We take transparency very serious.
The complaint comes about a week after Stand for Alaska received its own fine from the state for not properly disclosing its opposition in its name. That fine resulted from a complaint filed by Stand for Salmon. Stand for Alaska's complaint feeds into a common talking point in the debate over the Salmon Habitat Initiative. Both sides have repeatedly accused the other of getting support from entities outside Alaska. Both sides have, in fact, gotten support from entities based outside Alaska. In less than 2 weeks, Bethel residents will head to the polls in a local election to vote on city council representatives. But they'll also vote on a proposition asking residents whether to return to local option status. That change would end alcohol sales in Bethel, but would still allow for limited alcohol importation. With voting day approaching, local option supporters have begun to mobilize their campaign. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur attended their first public meeting on Wednesday.
It's a small group. 10 people getting together during lunch at the Bethel Teen Center. There is pizza and cookies, but most people don't have time to eat. It's just an initial meeting to get some face time with fellow supporters and answer a few questions. Meeting organizer Sharon Chikuchin churns out blue and white campaign buttons.
They say vote yes for local option.
Voting yes for local option gives the community a voice and an opportunity to have no liquor store here. We saw the results of having a liquor store here.
And it's these results from when the AC Quick Stop liquor store was open that haunt the people at this meeting and motivate them to campaign for a yes vote.
Some people were drinking way too much every day.
The ambulance crew was just going. The police were just going.
The devastation that we experienced was really too much.
It's the first time in my life. I don't want to go outside in my own community. I can't take my kids to the park in my own community.
Local option is not a perfect solution, and the folks at this meeting will be the first to tell you that. Bethel residents voted to leave local option in 2009. People didn't like that the state was maintaining a database of all the alcohol residents ordered. People didn't like that if you brought in a certain volume of alcohol on a plane, you had to clearly label the contents on the outside of your tote or suitcase in precise 2-inch letters, and it needed an itemized invoice attached. It was a headache.
It's a very confusing code, and it's not well written.
Bethel City Council member Leif Albertson has been a vocal opponent of alcohol sales in Bethel. But like most people, in 2009, he also voted to leave local option. What tipped the scale for him is the same thing that turned many people away.
The felonies. You know, his 18-year-old kids getting felonies over bootlegging. It really affected them for the rest of their life.
Albertson saw mostly young males who suddenly couldn't get a job in education or health care, the region's largest employers, because of these convictions. The stakes are high and can be devastating if you mess up under local option. And it's easy to do. Charges that are Class A misdemeanors suddenly rise to Class C felonies under local option. Giving alcohol to a minor becomes a felony. Bootlegging becomes a felony. And the definition of bootlegging broadens under local option as well. Possessing more than a certain amount of alcohol is suddenly bootlegging, because possessing a certain amount indicates intention to sell. A bootlegging felony can carry a sentence of up to 5 years in jail, along with a fine of up to $50,000. Nevertheless, there's support to return to local option after the frightening conditions that legal liquor sales brought to Bethel and to the surrounding communities. The petition to put local option on the ballot gathered 297 signatures. Many of those people share Albertson's view.
I think of the choices we have, this is the best option that we have.
Some local option supporters see local option as an immediate stopgap solution for Bethel alcohol sales, but not one they want for the long term. Returning to local option would shut down alcohol sales and prevent new alcohol stores from opening. But there is the potential in the future for Bethel to vote to enter a different local option status than what would be decided in the next election. There could be an option that perhaps restricts alcohol sales just to restaurants while prohibiting alcohol stores. Or Bethel could pass stricter city alcohol laws itself and leave local option altogether. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Bethel's election is Tuesday, October 2nd.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com. The Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium featured open positions include CMAs and LPNs for their primary care clinics in Southeast Alaska. Come work for Search and contribute to your community. Enjoy full benefits, paid time off, and retirement savings. Search is looking for someone like you. For more information, visit search.org/jobs. That's search.org/jobs to apply. This message sponsored by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium.
The Alaska Vitamin D Work Group has issued recommendations that doctors in Alaska should consider prescribing infants and pregnant women more vitamin D supplements. KDLG's Avery Lill has more.
Rickets is a condition that causes soft or weak bones in children. Usually, too little vitamin D is the cause. It's a rare condition in the United States, but healthcare providers think that it occurs a lot more often in Alaska. Here's Dr. Joe McLaughlin, Chief of Alaska Section of Epidemiology.
During 2001 to 2010, Alaska Native children aged less than 10 years living in Alaska experienced almost double the rate of rickets-associated hospitalizations compared to the U.S. pediatric population aged less than 10 years. And we don't have as much data that's been reported on non-native children.
There are a number of factors that can increase a child's risk for rickets. Among them, lack of sun exposure, darker skin, and low vitamin D intake. Researchers found that younger Alaska Native people are eating less vitamin D-rich traditional foods.
Oily fish, such as salmon, tend to be very rich in vitamin D, as well as other traditional Alaska Native foods coming from marine mammals in particular. That means that people who are consuming less traditional foods are likely taking in less vitamin D.
A work group with the Alaska Division of Public Health developed Alaska-specific vitamin D recommendations. It suggests healthcare providers consider doubling vitamin D supplements for infants and tripling the amount prescribed for pregnant women. So 800 international units for breastfed babies daily, 400 IUs for formula-fed babies, and 1,400 IUs for pregnant women. To be clear, these recommendations are for medical professionals prescribing supplements, not a recommendation for individuals to buy them at the grocery store or online. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Could climate change take forests back in time? Well, Kenai Peninsula residents and scientists see evidence that a warming climate is bringing back at least one tree that hasn't populated Alaska for millions of years. KBBI's Aaron Bolton explains.
Across the street from Homer's Pratt Museum, there's a small tree growing on the side of the road. You'd probably miss it if it wasn't for the wooden placard proclaiming it a metasequoia.
Okay, so just for your listeners, right now it looks like it's 11 inches high.
This is Jeff Coble. So he planted the sapling about 3 years ago. It's also known as a Don Redwood and can grow to be 100 feet tall.
But it looks like it might be 1 inch higher than when I planted it. It looks like it's about the same height as when I planted it. So it's not like doing great.
The metasequoia looks like what it is, a relative of the California redwood. More than 50 million years ago, they were a common sight here and across North America. Then they vanished. In fact, they were believed extinct. We only knew about them from 150 million-year-old fossils. Then, in the 1940s, a small population was discovered in a remote valley in China. They were planted across the United States, including Alaska, in the decades that followed. Coble wanted to see if they could hack it in Homer, just like they did millions of years ago.
Our bluffs were certainly warmer than they are now, although this metasequoia is now living here.
Are climate conditions becoming more like they were millions of years ago? He wanted to find out and ordered 30 trees. He gave them to friends, but only a few survived. So Homer isn't quite like it was when dinosaurs roamed. but it is moving in that direction. In recent years, the U.S. Department of Agriculture bestowed Homer with a warmer plant hardiness designation. You can see proof of that in Homer ecologist Kyra Wagner's backyard.
We have several different apple trees, and a lot of those apple trees now are considered to be normal. Norland, Parkland, considered to be completely hardy and fine for growing here in this climate that we have now. And 30 to 50 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case.
Several residents living on Kachemak Bay have attempted to grow metasequoias and other tree species, even a pear tree. The idea is that they could one day grow into forests if existing tree species are unable to handle the larger populations of spruce bark beetles and European spruce aphids that will most likely come with warmer temperatures.
If the spruce are not able to keep it going and our forests are going to be shifting, bringing in plants that we can eat from, that are edible, plants that are beautiful and productive and economically viable here is completely a good attempt to not recolonize, but just assisted migration, get these things up here that may over centuries eventually move up here, but climate change is happening so fast now.
Ed Berg is a retired botanist and a former research scientist with the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge.
People are experimenting with different things, but metasequoia is a reasonable candidate. I mean, it would have lumber potential, you know, certainly firewood potential. It grows very rapidly. In planting something like this, we may be kind of at the border, shall we say, of its temperature range. And that just means selective breeding is needed.
But don't expect force of metasequoias on the Kenai Peninsula anytime soon. So says Hans Rinke, a state forester who manages around 80,000 acres on the peninsula.
I think in the ornamental setting where, you know, people have a yard and want to experiment with some plantings on their own or have some interesting trees in their yard that are not spruce or birch, I think we'll continue to see more and more of that.
There's uncertainty what climate change will mean for Alaska's forests, but as temperatures rise, it could be, at least in some cases, a deja vu for plants not seen in the modern era. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at AK Public News. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Nat Herz and Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Avery Lill in Dillingham, and Aaron Bolton in Homer. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Lead is bad for the health of Alaskans, especially for young children. It affects developing brains, so even small amounts are unsafe. Lead can be hiding in older paint, workplaces, ammunition, fishing weights, aviation gas, and marine paint. If you think you or your child has been exposed, ask a healthcare provider about testing. Get the lead out, Alaska. Learn more at leadfree.dhss.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Did you know there is no safe amount of alcohol to drink while pregnant? But why should this matter if you're not pregnant or not trying to be? Because nearly half of all pregnancies are unplanned. Many women don't know they're pregnant right away. You could get pregnant and expose your baby to alcohol even before you know you're pregnant. If you're having unprotected sex, don't drink. Learn how FASDs impact everyone, even you, at letstalkfasdak.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.